As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
While the game on Sunday ended in a draw, news soon broke that Chelsea had beaten Liverpool to signing Moses Caicedo from Brighton for £115 million. So how have Brighton turned a £4 million bargain buy into a British record transfer fee? Were Liverpool ever really in the driver's seat for this deal? And of course, the question on everyone's lips. How on earth can Chelsea keep spending like this? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. In with us for this one, David Ornstein, the Athletic football correspondent. We've also got Simon Johnson, Chelsea correspondent, and James Pearce, Liverpool correspondent. Right, Simon, James, let's go to you on this one. Let's touch on Sunday's game first. And although it was a really entertaining match, it also showed why both teams still so desperately need that defensive midfielder, a number six, this summer. Simon, let's go to you first on this one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Conor Gallagher tried his best and certainly had his moments, offering the protection which allowed Enzo Fernandez to go a little bit further forward. But you could tell he's not suited for the role. He wants to play further forward. There was a bit of a hole in the middle of Chelsea's midfield, and that's where Caicedo is going to comfortably slot in, and those two will be playing together for years to come. And certainly that's what Chelsea hope, that these two will regenerate Chelsea as a midfield powerhouse in the Premier League.
Yeah, James, from a Liverpool perspective, that midfield has gaping holes in it. And we'll talk about, you know, future transfers in just a second, but they really need to firm up that midfield considering the losses they've had over this summer.
Yeah, I think that was the thing for Liverpool fans watching that game on Sunday, was there was no real surprises. I think throughout pre-season, Liverpool have looked great going forward, and, you know, a beautifully crafted goal to break the deadlock at Stamford Bridge on Sunday, you know, real quality. But they've looked vulnerable, out of possession, and that was the story of the game at Stamford Bridge, the lack of control, that lack of a defensive shield, because there is a kind of Fabinho-sized hole in the team since he left for Saudi Arabia. And I think you only have to look at the fact Liverpool had 35% possession. I think that's the lowest figure on record in a Premier League fixture between these two clubs that Liverpool have enjoyed. They just didn't have that ability to take the sting out of proceedings when Chelsea were in the ascendancy. And from looking early on, like they might run away with it. You know, I think in the end, they were actually fortunate to escape with the point.
Can Liverpool fans be excited? It's very hard to say on day one about new signing Szoboszlai. I mean, obviously, you'd need a bit more help there. But are there enough signs there you think, oh, this could be a really fascinating signing for Liverpool this season?
Yeah, and I think that's probably why that there's kind of so much frustration around the fact that they've left it so long to address, you know, the lack of a number six, because there is so much to admire. You're right, you know, McAllister and Szoboszlai, I thought, could be very proud of their debuts. You know, they add energy, they add invention. You know, I thought McAllister did as well as could be expected in that deeper role, but he's not used to playing as a single pivot like that. I think he's better utilised a bit further forward. And yeah, it's it, for me, it's just a case they have to get, you know, the right person operating between McAllister and Szoboszlai, because the business Liverpool have done this summer, I think, is exciting. The issue is they haven't done enough of it.
That brings us perfectly to you, David. Talking of business, Chelsea have done a lot of business this summer, potentially more to come. Moises Caicedo, finally, the saga is over. He is a Chelsea man, £115 million. At one point, we thought he was going to Liverpool. Quick U-turn. My popcorn literally dropped out of my mouth. I was like, I haven't even got started yet. I thought it was just going to keep going. Talk to us about how this deal got done.
Well, the first thing we need to point out is that Chelsea made the earliest running in this whole transfer saga, dating back to January, because it was they who made an offer for Moises Caicedo before Arsenal then came into the battle too, as they were looking to bolster in central midfield. I think they wanted Declan Rice initially, but then he was not attainable in the winter window. And so they focused on Caicedo, had a couple of bids rejected. He stayed and signed a new contract. But I think there was always an understanding with that new contract, if there wasn't a clause, that he could go if the right price arrived in the summer. We've reported that they had around four bids rejected, 60, 65, 70, plus add-ons, 80. I've forgotten the exact numbers. And clearly that was their price point for him. And with seemingly no competition for his signature at that stage, they felt that in this game of poker with the gambler himself, Tony Bloom, maybe in time they might be able to get a deal for under the £100 million bracket that Brighton were looking for. But Brighton tend to win in these situations. There were reports of a mystery bidder for Moises Caicedo, and that turned a few heads. And then very soon it emerged that Liverpool, whether they were the mystery bidder or not, were in for Moises Caicedo. And they, I think, made a couple of offers, actually. One initially, I think, on Tuesday last week, and then came the £111 million bid that was accepted by Brighton. They were very impressed by Liverpool's approach, their negotiations, the way they went about it, pretty discreetly. And I reported that personal terms would be a formality. They would have been a formality if Moises Caicedo had decided that he wanted to join Liverpool. The big problem was his decision. So very swiftly, once Liverpool had accepted that he was not coming to them, Chelsea re-entered the negotiations. They had been respectful in that couple of day period in between and sort of said to Brighton, we are still here, but we're not going to cross paths. We understand you've accepted the offer of Liverpool. But once that situation was dealt with, they came back in, they assured them that they would go to the required fee. So it ended up as £115 million, £100 million plus £15 million in add-ons that are highly achievable. A third of them relating to European qualification, two thirds of them to performance factors. There's a significant sell-on clause for Brighton. They expect to receive those add-ons pretty swiftly. It's an 8-year contract with an option of a ninth. It got announced. He underwent his medical and completed that British record move, ending a quite extraordinary few days. And Chelsea aren't done there.
Comprehensive as ever, David. Simon, quick one on James. Sorry, quick one on Liverpool. From your perspective, were Liverpool ever confident that they were going to get this over the line for Caicedo at all?
I think there was certainly genuine hope on Liverpool's part. As David said, Liverpool were fully aware that Chelsea had done a hell of a lot of groundwork on this deal, you know, going right back to January. And even, you know, when the landscape changed for Liverpool, really, when the Saudi interest came in Fabinho and Jordan Henderson, because up to that point, you know, they'd signed McAllister, they'd signed Szoboszlai. Liverpool's stance was that, yes, they'd inquired about Romeo Lavia at Southampton, but you know, there was no guarantees at that stage they were going to recruit a third midfielder, because I think, you know, the thought was, well, you know, do we maybe get Lavia and then, you know, ease him in gently? And, you know, you almost got Fabinho's successor there in waiting. And then, of course, the Saudi interest came. And I think that led to Liverpool kind of reassessing in terms of the profile, I think, of who they were going for, because suddenly they needed someone who was going to go straight into that team. And you know, ultimately they decided to pursue Lavia. You know, three bids that were rejected by Southampton. And then I think, you know, they got wind of the fact that actually it wasn't a certainty, Caicedo to Chelsea, that those discussions between Chelsea and Brighton had dragged on. And there was a degree of frustration on Brighton's part. And they saw an opportunity to try and take advantage of that. You know, it's quite rare to hear Jurgen Klopp confirm that a fee has been agreed. You know, usually he says nothing on transfers until it's actually been formally announced. But, you know, to be fair to Klopp, it did come with the caveat. You know, he said,
don't praise the night, the day before the night, something like that. So let's see what happens. And then we go from there.
Probably in English, you know, don't count your chickens before they hatch. So I think there was certainly a feeling there was still some work to be done in terms of the players' side. But I think we all know that you don't put in a bid of that size unless you've had some kind of assurances from the players' camp that he wants you to. I think Liverpool were used a bit in terms of that interest.
They were bait, really, to try and drive
So it's... I think that, because I think within a few hours of that Klopp press conference on Friday, suddenly the mood was very, very different at Liverpool. It was his preference is Chelsea and this deal isn't going to happen.
And Simon, we talk about the mood. I remember I was actually working for the Premier League on the day when I heard that Liverpool had come in for Caicedo with a Chelsea correspondent. And they were just like, what is going on? From a Chelsea perspective, obviously, I mean, two of the biggest midfield prospects really in the Premier League at Chelsea now, or Lavia still to come. We'll talk about that in a second. But what was going through your mind?
That it could be a reverse Willian. if you remember, Tottenham thought they'd got Willian and Chelsea came in the last moment and gazumped them. And there was a lot of crowing. I was thinking about how Sunday would go as a game, as a mood. I could sort of already hear the Liverpool fans who take great delight in mocking Chelsea counterparts anyway, but this would have given another string to their bow. And just also thinking, you know, Chelsea played a dangerous game here. This sort of haggling, this kind of, are they going to pay a big price at that stage, missing out on the player that they've planned for months to be next Enzo Fernandez? And you should have seen social media, by the way. If you,
Chelsea no. That's where I had my popcorn in hand. I was just like, this is actually brilliant.
You can imagine Chelsea fans didn't have too many complimentary things to say about the club at that point. But you have to remember that this is a complete midfield rebuild here. Jorginho gone in January. Kovacic and N'Golo Kanté gone this summer. Older players, lots of experience, but you would say approaching certainly close to the end of their careers than the start. Apart from N'Golo Kanté, not come close to challenging for a Premier League title. So this is a complete reset. This is now looking to the future, to sort of have a midfield that can, as I said earlier, can take on the Premier League for years to come. And this is the thinking. And look, yes, it was clearly a marker that Liverpool laid down, that Chelsea had to beat, and suddenly the haggling went out the window in terms of, by that stage, it's no, all chips are in, to use David's sort of reference. and they had to get their man, and they've got him. And I think, like, just like with Arsenal, Declan Rice, it kind of doesn't matter what the price is. If that's the guy you believe in, you just have to pay it.
Caicedo becomes a British record transfer, but is he worth it? We asked our Brighton correspondent, Andy Naylor, and here's what he had to say.
They've nurtured and developed him very carefully. If you look back to when he first signed, he was actually on the bench a lot without ever getting on the pitch, getting him to kind of see the Premier League firsthand. They then sent him out on loan to Beerschot in Belgium, which certainly helped with his education and development. And then, a year after he'd actually been signed, he was gradually brought into the team. This is a 21-year-old lad from Ecuador, humble background, has actually been noticed by his country from a very young age. You know, he was playing for Ecuador, I think when he was 18, and made his debut marking Lionel Messi. An early indication of how he was seen in his own environment, if you like. His debut was at Arsenal, and we immediately saw in that game what he was capable of. And he just has grown and grown since then, really. They don't already have the replacement, as far as I know, but because of how well prepared they are and how far in advance they look, they have plans in place. In January, they signed a young lad called Yasin Ayari from Solna in Sweden. Now, he's only 19, so he's a long-term project. Then you've got Mahmoud Dahoud from Borussia Dortmund, who played in the opening game against Luton on Saturday, made his debut, played very well. Free transfer, was a really highly thought of player in Germany. Hasn't quite worked out for him at Dortmund in the end. So he's kind of a chance to rebuild his career under De Zerbi at Brighton. With Caicedo, I think there was always the feeling, as fantastic a player as McAllister is, Caicedo is probably even harder to replace because of his all-round attributes, particularly defensively. And as daft as this sounds, considering they've just sold him for 115 million to Chelsea, that we're only looking at the tip of his potential going forward, bearing in mind that he's only 21, that he can improve still. Hence, Brighton have what I've been told is a whopping sell-on inserted in the deal as well, to reflect the fact that they think down the line he could be worth a lot more than 115 million.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwolere.
And sadly, the bad news doesn't stop for Liverpool there. David, you broke the story on Monday. Lavia picking Chelsea over Liverpool. I mean, what's the truth here? Did Liverpool actually make a £60 million deal? Because from what we understand, Lavia might be going to Chelsea for £50 million plus add-ons.
I'm not sure about the £60 million. I haven't corroborated that. No reason to doubt others reporting, because Liverpool were keen on him. They had been making incremental offers that were rejected, and there was an expectation that they would go back in. They did seem publicly anyway to pause somewhat, and I don't want to say pivot because I don't know, but pursue Moises Caicedo, maybe at the same time, if we're to be generous. And I don't know what message that may or may not have sent out to Romeo Lavia, because there were indications that Liverpool were getting closer to this if they were able to just edge up that fee. And reports, I'm only referring to them, suggested that Lavia would be quite keen. But I do want to bring it back to the context, like we did with Caicedo. Chelsea's interest in Lavia has been well documented for a long time. They made an inquiry at the end of the summer 2022 transfer window. This comes down to semantics. Was it an offer? Was it an approach? He had only just joined Southampton from Manchester City. Joe Shields was at Southampton. He joined from Manchester City in a recruitment role. Very quickly, he then moved on to Chelsea, and Lavia has sort of followed a similar path. So those links were there, and we can't get away from that. However, when it came to this summer, it was Liverpool who made the early running. It was they who actually submitted the formal bids. And Chelsea didn't feel like they were going stride to stride with Liverpool. But I use my words carefully there, because we reported that Chelsea remain interested in signing Lavia. And you spoke to people around the industry who were convinced that Chelsea were going to come in strong for him, just pick their right moment. And all of a sudden, that moment arrived with an offer that was also rejected. And then, as you say, reports suggested a £60 million bid that left Lavia on Monday with the decision to make himself. And we revealed that Lavia had decided to join Chelsea. The fee, I'm led to believe, would be in the region of £50 million plus add-ons. And it could be that Chelsea now close out a double deal, or deal for both Caicedo and Lavia. Liverpool were conscious of the fact in recent days that they could end up missing out on both and having quite an uncomfortable scenario. I don't know if you want to call that embarrassing, because Liverpool have done some good recruitment work, not only this summer, but over the years. We still have time left in the window for Jurgen Klopp, whose power is growing increasingly, and Jörg Schmatke, the sporting director, to do some work in the market and try and bring in a number six that's needed, and then we can judge them. But clearly things for Liverpool have not gone to plan.
Simon, do Chelsea need Lavia? I mean, because also, while this is all unfolding, I'm sitting there thinking, imagine being Lavia right now. You know, you're not the one that everyone's gunning for. The Caicedo deal makes all the headlines. Do Chelsea need him, or is this an indulgent buy?
I remember being told a few months ago that was essentially his situation, that a lot of clubs liked him, but he wasn't number one on their list. He was kind of like number two, number three. And you've kind of sort of seen that play out a little bit with this saga, even the way that Liverpool ended up sort of treating him. But do Chelsea need him? Yes, for the reason I've just flagged before. They've lost their three-man midfield that was played on a regular basis in the last few years of Jorginho, Conte and Kovacic. So now you've got a three-man midfield of Fernandes, Caicedo and Lavia. Pochettino has been playing a 4-2-3-1 in pre-season, but as we saw on Sunday, he changed formation. So are we going to see more of a 4-3-3? We're going sort of very tactical analysis here, an athletic trait, but it suddenly gives Pochettino that option. And of course, you know, he can rotate and so on and so forth, but do they want Lavia? He would have been given assurances, I'm sure, that he's not just coming to be a bit part player. Otherwise, he surely would have said, no, thank you very much. I'm heading off to Anfield instead.
James, where does this leave Liverpool? Two big potential signings, both slip through the net.
Yeah, I think it leaves them in a position where they're going to have to lick their wounds, spend the next few days reassessing and come up with a plan, because as David said, there is still time. I think it'll be when the window shuts is when you make, you know, that's the right time to judge them. But at the moment, it is a mess. When you pursue someone like Lavia for so long, you resist paying what Southampton wanted for him. Then you change tact, and I think, you know, they suddenly had more money to spend than they initially thought they had because of the Saudi deals. You know, £52 million swelling the kitty with those fees for Henderson and Fabinho. But to miss out on both of them is embarrassing. You can't get away from that. And I think it just feeds into this idea that this concern that I think, you know, now well and truly exists in terms of, you know, a club that for so long has been widely praised for strategy and forward planning. And, you know, you think of the shrewd recruitment deals that helped, you know, Michael Edwards as sporting director and Jurgen Klopp as manager build, you know, what was, you know, a machine really in terms of, you know, it only yielded one Premier League title, but you look at those points totals and the three Champions League finals in quick succession and the other trophies, the domestic cup double, and you think, you know, it's gone awry. You only have to look at the fact that, you know, Jörg Schmatke is the sporting director, is only an interim appointment. His contract runs out at the end of this month. You know, they've had three sporting directors in the space of, what, 14, 15 months. You know, the Ian Graham, the director of research, he moved on midway through last season. So, I think that's the concern, really. You know, where do they go from here? Because it's not a great bargaining position to be in when every other club knows you're desperate for a number six. And they also know you've got a fair bit of disposable cash because you've just slapped £111 million on the table to Brighton. So, that is going to make for an intriguing last couple of weeks of the window in terms of where they do turn.
You know, if you know a club is going in for Caicedo and they're not as interested in you, does that create a bit of unrest for someone like Lavia? Hence, he chose the Chelsea project.
I mean, I think Lavia, it's difficult to speak on his behalf, but I think it can't have helped, can it? It can't help when you know, it's you've been waiting for this deal to materialise. You know, you've seen Liverpool fall short in Southampton's valuation three times over the period of, what, 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, you're expecting that deal to happen, you know, speaking to people in, you know, Belgium that were close to him, you know, he was enthusiastic about coming to Liverpool. And then, of course, I think, you know, it's bound to affect your mindset a bit when you suddenly see them pivot and go after Caicedo instead. Although, you know, speaking to people at Liverpool, I think there's other factors at work here as well. When you look at the length of contracts that Chelsea are offering, and, you know, there's also suggestions that the financial package to the player was better. And, you know, I think for Caicedo, you know, it was the lure of London and being based there. And, you know, maybe that's a factor as well for Lavian.
Yeah, I'd love to throw it into anyone who wants to take it. Please, by all means, do throw your hats in the ring. But why is Chelsea so much of a much more enticing proposition for players like Caicedo or also Lavia and not Liverpool?
Yeah, I'll be thrown under the bus, AO. Thank you for that. you know, this happens, right? I mean, Liverpool have beaten Chelsea to signings, Van Dijk being one of them. Chelsea aren't quite the club they were, say, 20-odd years ago, where if there was a straight fight between the two clubs, it'd be a no-brainer. You know, Chelsea have won a couple of Champions Leagues in the last 11 years. In fact, no English club has won more trophies than Chelsea since 2005, although Manchester City are coming very hard on the rails. So you've got that. Then you've got this very exciting, well, it depends if you're a Chelsea or Liverpool fan here, but very exciting project that Chelsea are building. Young squad, Pochettino, this long, secure contract that you're being offered. So I'm sticking clearly with Chelsea here. I'm not going to, I don't want to upset anybody, because Liverpool are a fantastic club and Chelsea fans are certainly enjoying this triumph in the market over them. But like I said, you know, this does happen. You know, clubs will lose out to other clubs in the transfer market.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Chelsea felt like they needed both Caicedo and Lavia, but what are the key differences between both of them? Well, we asked tactics writer Liam Tharm to break it down for us.
I think both have interesting profiles as they're largely quite similar. Both are really sort of number sixes, both quite good ball winners. If you look at their stats, they're ranking in the top 25%, top 10% of Premier League midfielders for things like tackles, interceptions and blocks. I think the real difference is in possession. Lavia is much more of a dribbler. He didn't complete a huge volume of passes last season at Southampton. That might also have been down to their attacking style or their difficulties going forward. Whereas Moises Caicedo was much more adept at playing a high volume of passes and playing progressive ones that were going to break lines going forward. So overall, largely similar and to a degree, fairly complementary too.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Well, okay, if Chelsea do actually sign Lavia, Chelsea's new owners will have spent, let's get into some money, they've spent north of £900 million, near enough £1 billion since June last year. So the biggest question still remains, what do we need to really debunk in regards to transfers, and how are Chelsea still getting away with buying so many players at this point? Is there something that needs to be lifted on transfers that fans just don't understand? Do you want to take this one, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, well, partly because myself and Liam Toomey have done a big explainer in The Athletic today, Tuesday, trying to explain Chelsea's business model. And one of the things that we discuss is the cost of a transfer fee. You always see, don't you, whenever there's a transfer fee, oh, it's just this sum. For example, Caicedo, 115. That's all anyone concentrates on. They don't look at signing on fee, agents fees, etc., etc. So that can be an increase, you know, a very big fee on top. For example, McAllister, Liverpool, yes, 35 million, but what else did it cost on top of that, which isn't out there in the public domain? Erling Haaland is perhaps the best example of all. Yes, £51 million. Oh, that looks like an absolute steal. But I think he actually ends up being a lot more expensive than that because of the fees paid out there. So that's just part of the explanation why it's not quite as simple as it seems.
In essence, if Chelsea keeps spending like this, How does that affect, obviously, FFP? And also, let's say they do manage to balance the books. It also means that Poch has to, over the next five or whatever years, literally come in hitting trophies, Champions League. I mean, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, naturally, I think that there's pressure anyway when you make big signings. There'll be pressure on him to make it work. And that's not just at Chelsea. That's just from the game in general. The expectations were pretty low a few weeks ago, in a way, because Chelsea's season was so poor last year. But when you're spending British transfer record amounts, you smash the club record twice in the space of 7 months, the fan base also expectations go up. As far as the business model is concerned, it is quite complicated, and I'll do my best not to take 5 hours to explain it.
Can you do it succinctly, please?
Yeah, sum it up in a sentence. Well, yeah. Look, there's a lot of chat about amortization, and of course we've seen UEFA already close that loophole to make it now a maximum of 5 years that any club, not just Chelsea, but obviously they've reacted to Chelsea, can essentially put that transfer fee on the books divided by five. Let's just make it 100 million. So that would be worth 20 million a year on Chelsea's accounts. What they will argue, Chelsea, is that their sales, however, are straight profit. So they've made, for example, in their piece we explain, Kovacic, Mount and Havertz has brought them in £100 million of profit. So everyone talks about the total figure that Chelsea has spent, but it's not spent, it's not on the books right now as one mass payment. It's being spread over a number of years, whereas the sales are straight on the books. The other thing is Chelsea are getting all their big earners off the books. Those big salaries are being put towards funding. And what I've been told, it's already taken tens of millions of pounds off their wage bill, which then gets reinvested into signings so they can make these kind of signings. Then you've got the fact they're lowering the average age of the squad. So in terms of their sellable assets, instead of, as we're seeing with Lukaku, very, very difficult player to shift. He's old. He's on 340 grand a week. Who's going to buy him? It's a difficult situation, right? What they've got now is a bunch of sort of players and they're sort of 24 and under, most of them. So we take Casado and Fernandez out of the picture, but most of them have been on lower fees, lower wages and on long contracts. So they won't depreciate in value. So if there comes a time where they can be sold, there's a good chance that they'll make a lot more money for them. So there's going to be a lot of trading as far as Chelsea are concerned. I'm going to stop there before I lose you completely.
let me bring James in there. Let's just diffuse this a little bit. Yeah. Lighten the mood. But like, real talk, James. Well, I mean, Liverpool aren't short of cash. Why can't a model like this work for a club like Liverpool?
I think a lot of it comes down to risk and the willingness to take risks. And I think I remember asking Jurgen Klopp towards the back end of last summer's transfer window when there was this clamour amongst the fan base to go and start the midfield rebuild already then. And they didn't. And they, you know, they waited and they waited. And then injuries meant they ended up panicking on deadline day and bringing in Arthur Melo on loan from Juventus. And Klopp said, you know, the parameters haven't changed here in all my time here. You know, the self-sustaining business model, the club has to live within its means. You know, and he said, yeah, there are times when I'd like to take more risks in the market, but I accept this is the way that we do things. And that is the Fenway Sports Group way, that you try and minimise risk. And that's why I just don't see Liverpool going down the road of dishing out 8-year contracts when, you know, what do you then do when, you know, I see the flip side, like Simon said, that, you know, that value then doesn't depreciate because he's under contract for so long. But if that player flops or if that player gets a serious injury, then, you know, that's a major, major burden on the club. So yeah, Liverpool aren't going to, you know, as long as Fenway Sports Group own the club, that their approach isn't going to change. And they, you know, and that's why I think some people will be like, well, how can you not find 50 million for Lavia, but find 111 million for Caicedo? And it comes down to their business model of, you know, you do your homework on a player, you place a value on him, and then for them, you know, 50 million for Lavia 3 weeks ago wasn't value for money. They looked at him and thought, He's played, I think, 34 senior games in his entire career, you know, one season of football, really. And they thought that's too much for a player who's so inexperienced. Yet Caicedo is obviously in a whole different bracket in terms of much more complete. And that was why they were willing to pay the money to try to get that deal done. It didn't happen. But it's just a very, very different way of going about things.
Just to follow on from Dane's point, and I'll try and be briefer this time. Chelsea aren't breaking any rules here. What they're doing, people talk about loopholes and all this. Any club can do what they're doing. It's not like Chelsea are sort of kind of making up rules as they go along. They've just found a way to different way of doing business. We will see if it's the right way. It's very, very early doors. And yes, it's right to say it could backfire. But for example, they will look at it and go, there are some players right now that have been signed for big money, big wages, who are older, right? So what is the sell-on value of that player when he comes to the end of their contract? It's lost money. Whereas, for example, I've already been told that one of their sort of cheaper signings, let's say, they've had an offer since then worth three or four times what they paid for that player. They turned it down because they want to develop that player some more. But it shows their thinking, right? That, okay, we bought him for this much. We were already getting three or four times potentially what we paid for him. That can then help FFP be put back into perhaps funding another player. So that's the thinking behind all this. But James is very right to flag the risk element. There's also, you buy young, you buy potential. Does potential win you trophies? Does it get you in the Champions League? Chelsea's record in the market before was about a lot of finished articles coming together and doing the business. So, yes, it's kind of like we will find out if this works in the next few years, but there's no doubt it's ruffled feathers in the game, unquestionably.
Super quickly, just circling back on the Pochettino thing, does this then not feel like the perfect project in the way his career trajectory has gone? You know, Southampton, Tottenham, almost got them there. There's no Messi, no Neymar, there's no Mbappe, no egos to play with. I mean, you've got a young bunch of players who are super hungry. And if he's to prove himself as the manager many fans believe he can be, this is the perfect project to do that.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm wondering what's in his head right now in terms of he's at another London club, but it couldn't be any more different in terms of the backing in the market. He couldn't make any signings and now he's getting £150 million player through the door. It must be head-scratching, but you're right. I think going to PSG is massive for his experience in terms of dealing with egos and sort of working under pressure. I don't think he was under as much pressure at Tottenham because of the fact he took them up on an upward trajectory. PSG, you're expected to win. So it's almost like between Tottenham and PSG, you've now got the Chelsea scenario. You're expected to win. But there's also that rebuild element to it that he had at Tottenham. But you're doing it with the backing of the owners and the funding on transfers. There's no egos in that dressing room. That's the key. There's no Mbappe. There's no Neymar. It's he can mold that group of players that are all hungry and want to get better. They're all on incentivized contracts. That's another thing I haven't mentioned. You're rewarded if you get in the Champions League, for example, or you're punished as a lot of players have been for not getting the Champions League this season. So I'm fascinated to see how Pochettino does. He's got off to a very good start, but yeah, if Chelsea are eighth come January, the pressure will certainly be mounting on him again.
Well, let's end it there. Massive thank you to David, James and Simon. Remember, you can read more from these guys and keep right up to date with all this summer's transfer window activity on The Athletic. Sign up today for just $1.99 a month for an entire year at theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beal. The executive producer was A.D. Moorhead.
The Athletic.